a while back, I bought a house that was really terrible. It had a leak that was just unfixable. It was an unfixable leak. And instead of going, you know what, I have made a mistake. I bought a house with a structural defect that isn't fixable. Let me get out of this now. What did I do? Like, I stuck around. I tried my best to fix it. I threw money at the problem. I fought with the body corporate for years. It gave me sleepless nights and stress. Instead of just saying, you know what? This was a bad decision. Let me just get out of it.
Have you ever wondered about how we make decisions about our money? Or why we feel the way we do about those decisions? Welcome to Nudging Financial Behavior, the podcast that aims to help you understand how and why you make certain decisions about money. Presented by Dr. Giselle Willows, an expert in behavioral finance. This podcast is all about looking at human behavior and biases, especially when it comes to your finances. You can catch the series on YouTube, the Nudging Financial Behavior blog, or on your favorite podcast platform. Be sure to like and subscribe to ensure you don't miss an episode. Special thanks to our sponsor, IG Markets South Africa, a world-leading online trading provider that gives you access to opportunities across thousands of financial markets through their intuitive platforms and apps. Let's get started.
Welcome to the seventh episode of season two. I'm Dr. Giselle Willows. Thank you so much for joining us here today. In this series, we're breaking down human behavior and biases as we try to help you understand how and why you make certain decisions about your finances. In this episode, we have two for the price of one on biases. We're looking at the primacy effect, also known as first impression bias, and recency bias. These two are closely linked, very similar, but not quite the same. Both of them work on the order in which information is given, creating a bias in your thinking because of this. I've also got Christia van Heerden as my guest on this episode to chat more about these biases and the impact they have on traders. Christia works for our sponsor, IG Markets South Africa, as their global education lead. She's also no stranger to talking about money matters in a podcast. She hosted the Fat Wallet Show for several years, so she'll have plenty of great information and tips to give out. But before we jump into this episode, it's time for me to remind you to please hit the like and subscribe buttons. Both of them, please. We all know it. First impressions count. They really do for so many reasons. This is why you should never arrive late for a job interview. You'll always be playing catch up with the HR department and your potential new boss, trying to convince them that you're worth hiring. You should also never dress poorly when you meet someone for the first time if you want to impress them. If you were going on a first date and the person you were meeting arrived looking like a complete mess, you'd probably fake a family emergency to get out of that date pretty quickly. The initial feeling or impression that you give someone new will always stay with them, no matter how much you change or prove that you're different from that. This is called the primacy effect. Arguably, one of the oldest studies of the primacy effect was performed by Solomon Asch in 1946. He asked participants to rate people based on a collection of words, some positive, some negative. Results showed that participants rated the person with positive characteristics at the start of their description higher than those whose positive characteristics came at the end of their description. Essentially, if you're deciding between two people and they were described like this.
Person 1. Envious, stubborn, critical, impulsive, good-looking, and intelligent. Person 2. Intelligent, good-looking, impulsive, critical, stubborn, and envious.
Most people would pick person 2. Did you? But did you realize that both people were described using the exact same words, just in a different order? In social context, this is called the first impression bias. It's essentially how our human memory responds to primacy effects. Here's another example. Do you only remember the first few things at the top of a grocery list? You're not alone. It takes less processing power for our brains to practice and recall a single item, the first item on the list, than multiple items, or the items after that first item. Research has shown that when we read a series of statements, the amount of time we spend reading each statement declines with every new piece of information. It's no surprise then to hear that we are more susceptible to the primacy effect when we are tired and distracted, compared to when we are wide awake and paying attention. Now to the important information, how the primacy effect or first impression bias impacts the way we make decisions. Well, it's simple. The first piece of information you hear about something becomes the most important piece of information. If you're researching the pros and cons of a company before you invest in it, whichever one you read first will form the basis of your feelings towards that company. If it's one or more pro first, you'll likely lean towards investing. If it's one or more con first, you'll likely not invest. Several studies have examined this bias in elections. Time and again, the candidate who is listed first, implying that they appear first online and any associated material on them is made available first, was more likely to win the vote than the other candidates. Politicians who open a debate with a strong argument are more likely to have their message get across than those who are heard in the middle of the debate. For those of you that like to run polls on LinkedIn, perhaps consider the order of response options next time. I can assure you, marketers are using this bias against you all the time. But there's a twist in the tale. I told you that this was a two-for-one special this episode. Recency bias can shake things up a bit. There was a study done by Miller and Campbell where participants were presented with two arguments in a trial. One argument was for the plaintiff accused of a crime, and the other argument against. In some of the trials, the order of the arguments was switched, and in other trials, there was a delay in time between hearing the two arguments. When there was no delay between the first and second arguments, whichever argument was heard first tended to win. This was the impact of the primacy effect and highlights the power of opening statements in a trial or debate right there. Now, when there was a delay between the first and second argument, the participants voted for the second argument. Introducing the recency effect. Let's consider how the recency effect can impact your financial decision making. Garth McKenzie even mentioned this bias in our interview back in episode 3.
And our guess is that there's a recency bias element to that. People attach a lot more weight to what has just happened recently versus what might have happened looking further back.
By definition, the recency effect tells us that we place too much emphasis on current experiences or situations and not enough on long-term historical patterns. It creates a lot of problems in our investment decisions, and it's a difficult bias to overcome. To not focus on recent events that you've experienced is a tough ask, but the problem arises when we start taking new information and overwriting old memories with it. A perfect example of this is the trading behavior that is seen when a negative shock, such as the pandemic or geopolitical tension, hits the financial market. When prices are falling, many investors panic. This results in a combination of sales and adjustments to investment approaches. Most investors will look to cash because it's safer. What is risky about this is that situations don't carry on forever. There's nothing wrong with reassessing your investment approach in light of a change of events, but be careful that you're not being influenced by a recent occurrence that might not be sustained. It's easy to see how both recency and primacy can play havoc with your decision-making abilities, but what about a fight between primacy and recency effects? Who would win? Generally, if you have to make an immediate decision based on sequential observations, then the primacy effect dominates. But if the observations were some time ago, the recency effect carries more weight. If you watched a Netflix series a few months ago, you're more likely to remember how it ended than what happened in the first episode. I'd be interested now to find out what you remember about the pitfalls and biases that we discussed right at the beginning of season one, now that we're just over halfway through season two. I'm quite sure that if you binge the two seasons, as if we could be that lucky, you'll probably have a good grasp of those pitfalls from the very beginning. But if you've been tuning in one at a time as the episodes were released each week, then I bet availability bias from last week and today's two biases are holding the biggest space in your mind. Now, I'm very excited to have Christia van Heerden on the line with me. Christia is the Global Education Lead at IG, our sponsor for this podcast, and a passionate advocate for financial literacy. She's also got years of experience in the finance industry, some of them spent hosting the award-winning Fat Wallet Show. Christia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to do this again.
How does it feel to be the one answering the questions instead of being the host of the podcast?
It's quite lovely. It's a lot less preparation from my end. It's very chill. Being a podcaster is hard work. People don't realize.
It is. And definitely, you only realize how much work it is when you actually try and do it yourself. So in this podcast, we try and create an awareness about financial literacy, but also behavioral biases. And I always think that trading kind of goes against everything we as humans know how to do, because in theory, a successful trader loses more than they win. It's not so much about how many trades they lose and how many trades they win. It's all about the size of those losses. You've got to keep them small, and the size of those wins, which should be bigger. And so this is why stop losses were invented, right? We know that we're loss averse, and that's risk taking with our losses. And we know how disposition effect works. We're reluctant to sell our losses. So we put in a stop loss, and that should then stop us from letting those losses run, theoretically. But tell us what actually happens in practice.
A stop loss is so funny. So when you're on a diet, right, you're like, I am not going to have any cookies in my house, because I know when I have cookies in the house, I don't eat only one. It's a problem for me. I'm trying to lose weight. So I'm just not going to do it. So that's a stop loss. Okay. You don't have the cookies in your house. But if you are determined to have a cookie, let me tell you, you will make one, you will find one, you will Uber Eats one, you will make a plan to get that cookie back at your house if your craving is big enough, okay? So stop loss is a tool that we use to manage our risk. And in a perfect kind of zen environment, what I would do as a trader is I would go into a position, I would say, I am not willing to risk more than 2% of my total holdings within my trading account. I would put my stop loss there. I would make it a guaranteed stop so that the market doesn't slip and kind of bounce over my stop loss, and then I lose more money. So I would pay a little bit extra and have the guaranteed stop. And then I would know no matter what happens, I can only ever lose 2% of the total value of my trading portfolio, which means that I can lose a lot. Like I can lose 50 times before I have no money left, okay? Which is great. That is what a stop loss is supposed to do. What happens in the reality is traders look at trades too much. So they place a trade because this is real money on the line and it is terrifying. So they place a trade. Let's say they do have their stop loss in place. They see that the trade is going against them, and then they think maybe the stop loss is too close. The market is doing what the market is doing. Maybe if I move my stop loss just like a little bit further out, I can give the market a little bit of time to go up and down and do what it needs to do, because I am convinced based on my technical analysis and what my best friend said and what I've seen in the past that this trade is going to hit a level and then it's going to go back up. So now I'm in a thing with myself. I'm now in a fight with myself, because a part of me, a rational part of me, knows I need to limit my losses. But another part of me comes into the equation saying, yes, that's a good strategy for other people, but I can see that the stop loss is going to be triggered too soon. And so I keep moving my stop down. I keep holding on to that losing position because I have conviction. And your conviction, when you place the trade, your conviction is based on your technical analysis and the research that you did. When you're in the trade, that conviction becomes something else. It becomes your emotions take over, and you're like, you don't want to lose the money. You don't want to be wrong. I think people underestimate, like we often talk about not wanting to lose the money, but we don't often talk about how hard it is for us to be wrong about things. It hurts. It's not nice. And so then we hold on to that. We keep moving the stop loss. The position keeps chasing the stop loss, and before you know it, you're in deep trouble. And so a stop loss, it's wonderful. And in a perfect world, everybody would use them perfectly. But unless you can close a position and trust your kind of your trading system more than you trust your emotions, a stop loss can only do so much.
And I suppose we know that most traders lose money. I think the latest stat up on IG's website is that 70% of retail investor accounts lose money when trading CFDs with IG. This is very transparent information. What separates those top 30% from everyone else?
So this touches on something that you said before, which is people think, and I even a while back, you and I just all did a talk together, and I had some examples from actual traders in IG, but people think trading, successful trading, is calling a position in the right direction. Like they think, I am a good trader if I know where the market is going. So they think the success in trading sits in the predictive power of their technical analysis or whatever. But the reality, as you said before, is that very often successful traders lose far more often than they win. So they, very, very often they call the trade in the wrong direction. So I think the S&P 500 is going to go up. I go into the trade and it goes down and it kicks me out. So I've got my stop loss in place because I'm a successful trader now, remember. I've got my my stop loss in place and it goes against me and it kicks me out. And I'm like, okay, I've lost. Tomorrow I do it again. It kicks me out. I've lost. Tomorrow, the day after, I do it again. So that can happen. And that is happening, by the way, now in the market conditions that we're in. I am seeing, like, I'm following a lot of traders on Twitter and people are suffering because the market is just not doing what we think the market is going to do. Okay. So I can get kicked out of 10 trades in a row or 20 or 50 trades in a row. But if I have my stop loss in place at a sensible position, then I can afford to do that. Successful traders know that they can win, they can lose a lot if they only lose a little bit of money. So they can lose many times if they only lose a little bit of money at a time. But then when they hit it, when they call the trade in the right direction, they do the thing that to me is the hardest thing in trading, and they step back. And they say, cool, this position is going in the direction that I thought it would go into. Now I'm going to sit back and I'm going to let it run. I'm going to let it run for as long as I think it's going to run. So what the technical analysts do, as you know, is they have kind of a resistance level at the top. So they say, this is going to run to that point. And I've seen in the past that when the price reaches that point, people tend to start selling this position. So I am going to say to myself, when I get to that point, I'll take some profit or I'll take half of my profit. I know a few traders who do that as well. So they get to the resistance level, they take a little bit of profit, they leave a little bit in to see if it runs more, because obviously you don't want to lose out. It's that FOMO thing that is so difficult in trading. You don't want to lose out on that. So, and so a good trader can do that, can say, I know when I'm going to get out when I'm wrong, and I know where I'm going to get out when I'm right. Because calling the top is so difficult. It's so difficult because you're like, okay, well, yes, I've seen that resistance level, but I think it can go more. And again, your emotions start to play a role. And then you give back a little bit of those profits. So what we try to encourage traders to think about is about a profit loss ratio. Okay. So for every one rand, pound, dollar that you lose, you want to make 2 rands or pounds or dollars or 3, depending on what your strategy is. So if you have a strategy where you let's say it's very important to call a trade in the right direction and you want to be right often, then that can be smaller. Okay. So let's say you call 8 out of 10 trades in the right direction, then you can have a 1-to-2 win loss ratio. So you lose one, you gain 2. If you have a strategy where you're like, I don't really care how often I'm right, so I go into very few trades and I get stopped out a lot, then you need to make that gap bigger. So you, for every one that you lose, you need to win 3 or 4 or 5 or 10. And this whole process, I mean, it all sounds, again, it sounds so simple, but the emotional impact of seeing that. So what I always find very funny is traders hold on to their losing trades far, far longer than they hold on to their winning trades, because they think that the losing trade is going to turn around and it's going to go in their favor. And they think that they're going to miss out on the winning trade. They're like, okay, well, now it's in the money. I better take this profit. I'm so desperate to just make a little bit of money. And then that's just the time that they stay in the position in the end is actually what makes it difficult for them. And I'm saying this like, oh, I don't want it to sound like, oh, how could you do this? When I go into IG's trade analytics tool, which is a tool that measures kind of how traders behave, if I go in just randomly looking at random traders, when I say to you 90% of traders do this, it's probably an understatement. Traders hold on to their losers far longer than their winners, and then they miss out.
Yes. And that's something we've chatted about in a previous episode on this podcast, about the disposition effect. That's just textbook loss aversion coming out, because loss aversion is all about how we're risk-seeking with our losses. So we end up holding them longer, hoping that they're going to turn around. But then we're super risk-averse with our gains. We just want to bag that profit and get out of there. And it's actually the worst decision you can make, but it's just textbook loss aversion. And it's not just traders. It's all of us. It's everybody in all our decisions that we make.
Exactly. I was just about to say that this is also this happens in personal finances all the time. It's not as pronounced because it doesn't happen in short time frames like it does in trading. But we do this constantly. Like, think about, a while back, I bought a house that was really terrible. It had a leak that was just unfixable. It was an unfixable leak. And instead of going, you know what, I have made a mistake. I bought a house with a structural defect that isn't fixable. Let me get out of this now. What did I do? Like, I stuck around. I tried my best to fix it. I threw money at the problem. I fought with the body corporate for years. It gave me sleepless nights and stress. Instead of just saying, you know what, this was a bad decision. Let me just get out of it. And then the same when you make a little bit of money when you start investing and you make a little bit of money in investing, you know that the money that you're making is just paper money until you sell the share. And how many of us have looked at awesome profits that we've made and gone, oh, let me take that just before the market takes it back? It's human nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to come back a little bit to the whole successful traders and what you were describing to me. It almost sounded like mindfulness on the part of the successful traders. In my work, I obviously spend a lot of time trying to educate people on their biases. And I often get asked, how do I stop being like this? And it's sometimes difficult for people to hear, but there's not very much you can do about your personality. Your environment and your influences, definitely, but your personality is your personality. What you can do, though, is you can be mindful and you can have systems and processes to manage the impact of those biases. Do you have any views on that?
Yes. So your best friend in trading, and I don't know how people did this years ago when technology wasn't as advanced, but your best friend in trading is just to automate as much as you can. Like, you make the decision. So I know a trader who only does his trade. He only opens positions and closes positions on a Sunday, because the markets are closed. So he does his technical analysis, he sits down, he schedules his trades to go in at certain price levels, and then he has his stop losses in place, he has his limit orders. So a limit order is where you take a profit. So he has his limit orders in place, and then he does not look at his trading. And that is phenomenal. Like, if you can get yourself to a point where you have your conviction, you take your position, and you trust the system, and you walk away from it, then you take yourself out of it. Like, mindfulness is not going to help you when you're like looking at the market, because what gets triggered inside of you is primitive. It's fight or flight responses. You know, you feel like there's a lot more on the line than there is. And so automation absolutely is your friend. And then there's something that I'm borrowing from Simon Brown. It's a concept that I learned from him, which is something called the perfect trade. So what he was saying is, you have no control over what the market is going to do. You don't have control over how much money you're going to make trading. You just don't. Like, you think you do, but you don't. What you do have control over is where your entries are, what your entry confirmations are, where your stop loss is, where your limit order is. So if you make a checklist for yourself and say, a perfect trade for me is when the entry triggers and then I get my confirmation, I go in after the confirmation, I set my stop loss at 2%, and I take profit at least twice as far away from my stop loss. That is a perfect trade for me. That is something you have control over. You don't have control over the market. And so your job as a trader is to try and get as many perfect trades in a row. regardless of the outcome of the trade. So then it doesn't matter if the market has gone against you, because you've got your risk management in place. It doesn't matter kind of what happens in the short term in the market. You have done the part that you have control over. And I think that's such a beautiful concept, not just for trading, just for life in general. You know, if you know that there are things that you have no control over, identifying the things that you can control and focusing on those, I think it'll bring so much peace, you know, just in general in your life. I think that's a great concept.
I couldn't agree more. In the previous episode, we spoke about the availability bias, and today we're speaking about primacy and recency effects. Something I keep coming back to is the perils of news and social media. That's the information that's available to us. It's what we've heard most recently. It's what you've just seen, and news influences trading decisions in a bad way sometimes. Can you share with us anything around how news and social media impacts our decisions?
So the worst thing for a trading brokerage is periods of no big news. When the minute something happens in the news, the minute there's a big global event or meme stocks or whatever it is that gets driven by news media, the volume of traders that we see then coming into IG spikes like many, many fold. And so good traders are with us throughout. So we use the volatility index as a kind of a stand-in to figure out what is happening out in the world. So it's actually funny, when you work for a trading brokerage, you actually don't have to read the news, you just have to watch the VIX. And then you know, like, oh, something is happening and you can go find it. It saves you a lot of trouble. But good traders stay with us throughout, because good traders can find opportunities in sideways markets. Traders who don't have good strategies tend to only come when there is volatility in the market and when there is news in the market, so much so that it is plain as day within a brokerage firm. News media paired with trading is addictive. I mean, it is so thrilling when you, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody else, when something happens in the markets or in the news, it is so fun to go and see actually what is happening in the markets. How is the market responding to this? And it's natural. It's a normal part of things. So what I try to do is I try to encourage traders to have a kind of a demo trading account in addition to their live trading account. A lot of pushback that I get on that is like, oh, people don't really learn how to trade on demo accounts because it's not real money. That is true. So the financial aspect, you don't feel as closely, but making a prediction on how the market is going to react based on what's in the news, that is as thrilling in the demo environment as it is in the live trading environment. And so I encourage advanced traders, sometimes especially advanced traders, to have a place where you can just see if you were right about something. So just because, or just as much as it hurts to be wrong about something, it feels awesome to be right about something. And so I think, as always, it's not a good idea to fight your own nature. It's a good idea to try and find ways around that. I mean, Giselle, you know, you're so aware of cognitive biases, but you still fall victim to all of them, even if you know them. And you can say, oh, now I'm doing that, but you can't stop yourself. It just is how the world works.
Yes, and my close friends are also great at calling me out on it when I don't call myself out on it. Absolutely. I just know how to name all the problems in my life.
Yeah, exactly. You know why you're doing them, but it doesn't stop you from doing them.
Thank you, Christia. I really appreciate your insights. It's been great to have you on the podcast. We're really grateful to have teamed up with IG Markets South Africa for this series.
It's my pleasure. It was so fun.
And that's it for episode 7. In the next 2 episodes, we're unpacking the last of our biases for the season, home bias. There's a lot to get through because it's a bias that can really mess with the diversification or lack of diversification in your investment portfolio. So it needs 2 episodes. We're going to cover it comprehensively, and I've got 2 great guests lined up. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss it, and please like the episode. Thanks for watching or listening.
That was Nudging Financial Behavior, hosted by behavioral finance expert, Dr. Giselle Willows. Make sure you like and subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. You can catch the Nudging Financial Behavior podcast on YouTube, our blog, or your favorite podcast streaming platform. Thank you again to our sponsors, IG Market South Africa, for helping to bring the show to life. And now for the disclaimer. This podcast should not be seen as advice. All the information and opinions are of a general nature. They are not intended to address the needs or circumstances of any individual. We are not financial advisors, neither are any of our staff or service providers, nor is our sponsor. All expressions of opinion by the host or guest are subject to change without notice in reaction to shifting market conditions. Any information you get from us should be seen as only that, information only.